All right. Welcome to the fourth episode of the Good Game Podcast. I'm Roger Baugh.
And I'm Ethan Bryant.
And we are here to discuss our current top five favorite games of all time. First, real quick, we want to talk a little bit about what kind of considerations we put into these lists and why we pick these games. Egan, do you want to start?
Yeah, first and foremost, and with regard to the podcast and this episode, we really want to focus on replayability in games. And for myself, personally, I love games with tons and tons of depth. I want to deep dive that game. I want to be able to look up strategies and play it technically forever. That would be awesome. I would love to just get better and better at it. So that's one of our main focuses with this podcast and our top lists.
Yeah, and we would rather play one game many times and like deep dive into it instead of playing multiple games on a surface level once or twice. Not to say that we're opposed to playing new games, but we really look for games that have that staying power and that you can constantly pull out and over and have a great time with. So a couple things that I put into consideration for my list. None of the games on my list are games that I've played once. I've played all these games at least three or more times in the last year, and probably more before that. And these are all games that I can pull out for the most part with any group, depending on the weight of the game, and have a great time with. And I still, like you said, can discover more depth for the most part. So that's something that I looked into.
Yeah, sweet. And now on my list, and with regards to my with how I categorized everything and valued the games on my list, the first was fun level. I love games where I just have an extreme amount of fun. That's my mm-hmm. favorite theme. And the next part was depth. And one game in particular in my list doesn't have a ton of depth, but same. The fun level just is out of the window. Like it's out of this world.
Okay.
And I can't see this game ever not being played. But yeah, fun level is my main thing. I just love I love it when everyone is engaged, and where I love games that aren't multiplayer solitaire.
Same.
I love just everybody getting engaged into an event, this yeah. monumentous thing on cardboard. That's my favorite thing about board games. So
high
that's
levels
what
of interaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, do you want to start us off with number five? Let's do it. Let's jump in.
Yeah. So starting off with number five, this game is the one I was just talking about that doesn't have a ton of depth.
Okay.
But it has the fun level that blows the roof off of my house every time we play it. And it is Skull King.
Okay.
Skull King is a trick-taking game based around a pirate theme. And it has cards in the deck that manipulate the basic aspect of a trick-taking game and cause different crazy events to occur because some cards trump all other cards while other cards only trump some cards. And the other day we came to the conclusion it's basically just rock, paper, scissors, because one card trumps this card, trumps this card, trumps this card, and it's just a circle. But it's fantastic because I haven't had a single game of Skull King where people weren't screaming at some point. And not angry or crazy screaming, but the most just riotous, fun, raucous time I've ever had. So Skull King, number five on my list. I love it to death. Just one of my favorites.
Awesome. Yeah, and that game's pretty inexpensive, right? You know, you could recommend that to somebody and it, you know, they could pick it up for pretty cheap, right?
Oh yeah, anywhere between I think like $10 and $14.
Oh yeah. Perfect. Yeah. I think there's only one game I could reasonably recommend to people on my list, but and that actually is my number five, which is a game that I can play with any group. It's always fun. It's super short. You can teach it in one breath. And that is Monikers. So Monikers is a game where It's just a box full of cards with ideas on them. And what you do is you shuffle them up and deal them out to people, and they pick a couple, and you take all those cards that people picked and make one stack. And then you use that stack to basically play a game like Taboo, where you have to get your team to guess what's on that card without saying what it is. So there's three rounds. In the first round, you can say anything you want except for the word. And then at the end of that round, you take those cards back and you shuffle them up, and then you do it again, guessing the same cards, but you can only use one word. And then the final round, you shuffle those cards up again, and then you do it, and you have to act and do charades. And what I love about this game is just the fact that it creates its own metagame each time. Like, there's words that may be used to identify other words that you would normally never think of, but everyone playing this game is like in on that. So you really have to pay attention to like what has being said in the first round and what's being said in the second round, and then it bleeds into the third round. But I would recommend this game to anybody. I think it's like $20 most places, and they have a couple extra boxes of expansions that if you get tired of the base cards, they come up too much. You can easily add in more cards and just mix it up. So number five for me is Monikers.
Monikers is too good.
It is.
It's so good. Simple. And I can't lie, I completely forgot it when I was making my list.
Would you have swapped it for Skull King?
I don't know. It's Skull King gets played more, okay. But Monikers is coming up. I mean, it gets played so much. And we noticed something last time we played was every time we play, we learn something. Because the cards are so wild, usually with historical figures or something that we've never heard of. And we remember those things forever.
Mm-hmm.
The funniest one I can remember was over Christmas we played, and there's a card that says this, and I remember it. The Spanish woman who botched repainting that fresco of Jesus. That is the entire thing on the card. And we're such sticklers for getting it right and learning about the cards that those things stick with us. And it's so cool. So not only is it the most fun time, we remember and learn so much. And it's just absolutely awesome. Love that game.
Yeah. So good. So good. And yeah, if you're looking for a good family game or just an affordable game that you want to pick up, definitely check out Monikers. It definitely will make you have a great time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So now on to my number four. This game, I looked into, well, first off, I got into the hobby less than 2 years ago. It's been not even a year and a half. And the first game, this was one of the first games that came to be, like, I started looking up and studying and seeing if I liked it and so on. But it was out of print. I couldn't find it anywhere. And I remember the day I had it on my notifications on Game Nerds and it popped up and I instantly bought it. I don't even think I had money to buy it. It was so silly of me, but I said, I have to get this game. I had looked up the rules and learned it so well before I even had it. That game is Great Western Trail and still just one of my favorite games ever. So fun. I think if someone's listening to this or knows about board games, they know what this is about, but cattle ranchers driving your team of cattle and ranchers up to Kansas City to sell all your cattle, a little bit of deck building, but a whole lot of fun. I love the engine building aspect. And one part I mentioned before, or actually I didn't mention, one of the things I love in board games is the interaction between people and how people influence the board state. And in Great Western Trail, that was my first, that was the first time I had experienced that in a board game where people really changed the board state for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my favorite aspects that has really curated my next three games actually. But Great Western Trail, I play it anytime. Such a good game, love it to death.
Does this game make your top five with the expansion or even without it? Because it does have one expansion. It's good enough without?
Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think the expansion just adds more variability and replayability to the game.
Okay. So not necessarily something you need to have to get the most out of the game, because I know some games the expansion like fixes it, but this is definitely not one of
Oh
them.
yeah, I don't think it needed fixed. If anything, one benefit to it, I think it kind of enhanced the game, made it a little bit easier and quicker.
Okay.
Kind of like the Prelude expansion in Terraforming Mars.
Just streamlined it a
Yeah,
little
because you
bit.
can get up and going and get, yeah, you can, there's cards. Something I haven't seen too much, just like a little token you can get in the game to help you get through your deck quicker.
Oh, okay.
For like
That's
to
cool.
search for cards quick. And it's kind of really interesting to me. I thought it was kind of interesting. But yeah, anyways, yeah, Great Western Trail.
That's definitely one at the top of my I need to try this game list. So definitely excited to try that because it sounds like it's right up my alley. Cool. Well, my number four is probably the only, I would call it a gateway game, I guess. Not really a gateway game, but a game that would help introduce new gamers to the hobby. And this game, everyone I've played it with has enjoyed it. It's very cute and it's very like pretty. And so I think that pulls people in. And this game is Everdell. So Everdell is a,
Oh.
yeah, Everdell is a worker placement tableau builder. So you're acquiring things and building up a bunch of cards in front of you that kind of turn into an engine. And I think the reason I love this game so much is it's very well produced. Like all the components are really high quality. The art is really good. It looks kind of like a red wall type little animal critter world. And I think the thing I enjoy about this game is that it is deceptively deep. Like it has a lot of depth, but it doesn't, it's kind of misleading because of the art and the way it looks. People kind of like games like Root, you know, people see it and they're like, oh, this is really like cute, you know, and then you play it and it's actually like got a lot more depth than you would initially think. But Everdell is a game that when the people that I've been able to get to play it have really enjoyed it. And like my brother-in-law doesn't really play games a lot, but he will sit down and play a full game of Everdell. And I think this game is really cool because the expansions, I have everything currently for it. So the expansions can really like take the game in a different direction. So depending on the group you're playing with, you know, you can make it more about getting more points, like higher scoring, or you can make it more brutal and add these conditions that make the game harder to play, make it harder to score. And then there's another expansion that kind of adds like variable player powers and things like that. So I think it's one of the most diverse games I have that can actually, it's actually kind of tricks people into playing a heavier game than they think, because at the beginning it's very simple, but by the end you have a big engine going. So overall, I think this game is probably my most diverse game for all people. I can play it with new people, I can play it with, you know, veteran people and they'll enjoy it. So that is my number four, Everdell.
I wasn't expecting that. I was
Yeah.
not expecting Everdell on your list. That's
It's really
awesome.
good. Yeah. No, I love it. It's fun.
No, yeah, it was such a fun game to play. You introduced that one to me. Well, I had heard about it, but you let me play it since you had it. And man, it hasn't been on the top of my list to buy, but it's been on my Amazon wish list thing. And I go in there, but it's like $100 for the base game alone right now.
That's the collector's
Because I think it's out of
edition.
print.
Yeah, I
No,
know
both of
that.
them.
Oh, really?
Both of them are $100 because the base game of just the normal edition, I think it's out of print or getting to be at that point.
Well, good news. They do have another Kickstarter. I believe it's the last one. It's going to have the final expansion. I think it's going to have a big storage box for everything, which the pledge manager should allow you to get the rest of the stuff. So, this game can be pricey. I think the base retail version of the core box is like $60 normally. And then there's a collector's edition, and then a couple of the expansions have collector's edition. So it can be pretty pricey, but I feel like I've gotten my money's worth out of it. And I think it's been a worthwhile investment for me. But overall, I think it's a pretty solid addition to your collection if you're looking to share it with people, especially like people who don't play a lot of heavier games.
You know, the only thing that's missing in that game?
What?
Being able to go to war, man.
Yeah, no. And in the Spirecrest expansion, it adds like really brutal conditions. So it makes it, you're not really at war with each other, but like you have, it turns it into like a brutal, I think you would enjoy that expansion the most. It makes it like the most difficult to do what you want. And so it makes your decisions like a lot more crunchy, because you're usually having to give up something. So that's like the heavy expansion that makes the game a lot more deep. So
nice. I'll
have to try that one.
Okay. No, yeah, definitely up on my list. One of the games I want to get. Jumping into my number three, speaking of a war and why I love being able to just beat each other with baseball bats across the table. This is one of my new favorites, and I did not think I would be putting it on this list, but I love it so much. I have played it over 15 times. I've played it 4 times with people, and I've played it over 15 times solo. and it is probably one of, if not the best solo game I have. This is PAX Premier Second Edition. And Roger did play this with me when I was still trying to figure out the rules, and it was a brutal game because we didn't know everything yet. And it ruined the game too. It wasn't fun.
How many rules did we get wrong at that time?
All of them.
Yeah,
literally every single one. I didn't even know what I was doing. I thought I knew.
And this isn't an easy game when you know the rules. Yeah, it's hard when you know the rules. It's even harder when you don't. So.
Oh yeah, and it's but man, getting to why I like it. Oh man, it's so crunchy. Every decision you make affects the board state in such a crazy way, and. And if you're not touching the board on your turn, you're getting prepared to. You're getting cards that will just either annihilate people or cause people to immediately stop what they're doing and rethink their whole strategy. It is an extremely tactical game. And yeah, for that, I love it. And it is so simple with how the actions go, because each turn you have a total of 2 actions, and that's it. You can play a card, or you can do a basic action, and it, everything that stems off of that is huge. And it's such a fun game. It's just speaking of the depth, there's so much depth. I have so much fun when I play it. And then the last thing that I just love the most, I love it when everybody's turn affects what's going on. And mm-hmm. where everyone has to be engaged, otherwise they'll miss something. And it almost forces that engagement. I love it so much. It's honestly like a knife fight in a phone booth. It's just fantastic. Yeah. I just love that. I love that in board games. I love it in PAX Premier.
Yeah, I really like in this game where like the factions on the board are not necessarily controlled by the players, where you can switch your allegiance. I really like games that do that because it makes it, you know, you're not tied to one thing. The complication of this game is like knowing what your options are as far as like the cards go, because that's such a huge part of the game. But the actions, like what you can do, is actually pretty simple. So that's what made it really hard to learn, is like, I don't know what all these cards do, but I understood like the action side of the things, and it made it interesting, you know, oh, this faction's like kind of declining, I need to swap to the one or to counter you because you're joining this faction which is doing well, so I can cancel that out. So it has that fun kind of, you know, checks and balances kind of system, which I did enjoy. So good choice. And it's really well produced too. I love the like cloth board, and you know, very unique. I haven't seen in another game.
I couldn't help myself. I had to go all in on that Kickstarter.
Yeah. And Egan doesn't get that many Kickstarters. So yeah, you've only gotten three? Yeah.
I've gotten 1-3. Yeah, you're right. 3.
Yeah.
2 on the way.
Yeah. That's exciting. Okay, so my number three, we had a little talk about this before, but my number three was originally a different game, but I had switched it out because I had not played it enough at a different player count to confidently put it there. So my number three is actually a campaign style game, and that is Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle Earth. This game is what I would call an experience. And I think that there are some, I guess, caveats to putting it on here. For me, it's my number three because the people I've played with and the experiences I've had with it are some of the best I've had in gaming. There's nothing better than sitting around a table with four or five people that are all fully invested in this Lord of the Rings world and experiencing this journey. You know, people are, you know, cheering when you win and like groaning when you lose, when you like slip up, and everyone's like so invested in it. And the app is so well done. It just takes care of all the stuff you don't want to do in a campaign style game. You don't have to track things and you don't have to have a pen and paper and write down all the items you have. The app just keeps track of all that stuff and streamlines it. So you can really just focus on the experience. This is the first game that I'm going to have painted. So that's another thing that has elevated the gameplay for me too, is just having all these painted figures really brings out that experience as well. So that is the only, I guess, campaign style game that I've ever been able to play consistently. So maybe one day like a Gloomhaven will show up on here if I get that played consistently. But for now, Journeys in Middle Earth is my top gaming experience. So that is my number three.
That is so awesome. Journeys in Middle Earth was up on the top of my list of games to buy when I started in the hobby, in front of Gloomhaven, because I didn't know about Gloomhaven, but I very much like Lord of the Rings. I like it so much that I know Spanish, and I have read the books in English, and I've read all the books in Spanish.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
They are so good either way. They drag on a little bit, but I love everything about Tolkien's world, and I wanted to play that game so bad. But my wife, she had never seen the movies or anything, and she would want to do a campaign game with me. But she loves Gloomhaven, and if we ever finish Gloomhaven and Frosthaven, Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle Earth will be at the top of the list for sure. Absolutely. And
another nice thing about this game is that it's pretty new. It came out, I think, it came out in 2019, I believe. So Fantasy Flight obviously goes all the way with their campaign style games. They've done Descent, they've done Lord of the Rings, they've done Star Wars Imperial Assault. And I think this one is like the final evolution of app integrated gameplay. I think this one, like Mansions of Madness, hasn't really appealed to me because I'm not a huge fan of the Cthulhu mythos, but the one thing that I've heard that people like about that is you can do like a one shot, a one and done story, whereas Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, you have to do the campaign. You can't just play a once off mission, or well, in Star Wars you can, but it's not the same. But Lord of the Rings is definitely, it is an investment, but this game's pretty new, and I think based on what I've seen, it's going to be here for a long time. So they've already put out one big box expansion for it, and I think that significantly made the game better. And I've seen some spoilers on Board Game Geek about what the next big box expansion is going to be. So I'm pretty excited for the future content of this game. So, yeah. So what is your number two?
Man, my number two, this is the same exact situation as Great Western Trail, up on the top of my list for a long time, because I knew the theme would totally pull my wife in and pull a lot of my friends into the game, even though it's very deep, very stressful, and another, maybe not knife fight in a phone booth style game, but an intense strategic game where you can lose very quickly if you make a wrong move. And that's Food Chain Magnate. And this does not follow Roger this criteria of a game that has been played three or more times, because I've only played Food Chain Magnate twice. But just after the first game, I had an experience that I've only had with one other game. That game's not on this list, and I think I'm going to talk about it later. But Food Chain Magnate just made me fall in love with board games even more. My friend I was playing with, he grabbed his player aid, which is a menu, and he's sitting there with his menu, and you select cards in the menu, like what you're going to get to recruit for your business. And he's sitting there, and just like at a restaurant, every time any of us wanted a card, we would say, I'll have a chef, a pizza chef, and I will have a waitress. Give me a waitress. And it was like, it was hilarious from that point. And then the gameplay just blew it out of the water. It was so, so fun and so mean. Yeah. I love how mean Food Chain Magnate is. You have to think ahead, and the theme and everything about it, when it all comes together, is such a beautiful masterpiece. And even though I do think that the art's a little bland, but it gets me. I could care less about the art in this game. It's basically just a work of art in the gameplay. It just focuses on that gameplay aspect, and I could play this game forever.
And this is a game where you're managing like a food chain business, right, around town. That's kind of the synopsis for it, right?
Yep, everybody's managing a food chain, and everybody also has to provide their own marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And Shut Up and Sit Down has talked about this, but as soon as you market to a house, that house is obligated to buy whatever you are selling, which is probably the most fantastic part of the game. To just imagine someone walking up to your door saying, "I'm a billboard," but technically having a gun, showing a gun in their pocket saying, "You're going to get two burgers tonight at 8 p.m. and you're going to like
how much they're going to cost.
Yeah. And they're going to be $10 a piece. And I think it's hilarious, but then I also just think it's so intense. Every moment of that game, everyone is just shaking in their seats, waiting for it to all play out, because they've been imagining how it's going to play out, but they need to see it happen. And when it does and it goes well for you, it's awesome. When it doesn't, it's hilarious. And it's just a fun game. I love it.
Definitely need to try that one. All right. So my number two is a game that may eventually be my number one, but for now it's pretty close. And that is my favorite 4X game, and that is Eclipse Second Dawn for the Galaxy right here. So Eclipse is a 4X game, which is expand, exploit, exterminate, something else with an EX. But basically in this game, you are running a faction in space of an alien race. And you have this big map of the universe, and you get to kind of explore around. You can build these ships, and they're super customizable. You can research powers. This is probably like the cleanest game that I've ever played. Like the systems are, in my opinion, perfected. Like, I don't think there's any flaws in this game's design and like gameplay and execution. And the way that the game allows you to basically, you can go all in on a turn, because there's no limit to the actions you take. You just have to be able to pay for everything you did. And so you can technically run yourself into the ground if you're not careful, but that also gives you the flexibility to maybe push the envelope a little bit. The combat's super smooth. Just every game that I've played felt so different. And I think the scalability in this game is some of the best I've seen. Like, you can play it with any number of players, and it streamlines itself so well. I think this game is a masterpiece. And so this one is a little bit more pricey, but I think the base game is available in retail. So not necessarily one I could recommend to everybody, but definitely one of the best experiences I've had as of late playing games. So that is Eclipse Second Dawn for the Galaxy.
Such a good choice. I played this game with you, Roger, and we played it. I think I played it two or three times now.
Yeah, total. We played it three, I
can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was three. I played it three. Just you and me. It was another one with Scott and then another one with Michael.
Yeah,
three. Yeah. But one thing that is probably the coolest about the game was the first night that we decided to play it. And it was just Scott and you and me.
Mm-hmm.
And you had that rules teach video that was probably over an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting there thinking, well, this is ridiculous.
Right.
this is insane. I don't want to play a game. This is too much depth. This is too much going on.
Mm-hmm.
We got into the game and I felt like it was one of the most simple games I had ever played.
Mm-hmm.
It was so basic and simple. I mean, everything about it was so streamlined. I felt like I could play it as a medium weight game with anybody.
Yeah.
The only difficult part is if someone knows strategy more than another person, I think that they have the upper hand with regards to like upgrading their ship or researching. But other than that, the action selection, everything is so streamlined. I saw it as probably the best Star Wars game that's not Star Wars.
Agreed.
Everything about Star Wars and space combat and everything, it has it in spades, but it's just not Star Wars, but it's the best one. I love it. And if it wasn't so expensive, I'd be all in on everything about it. And I'm too petty to just get the retail version.
Yeah, no.
I would have to go all in at this point.
Maybe one day they'll do some expansions because this game was a remake of an older version of the game, which I think came out in 2011. And that game did have some expansions that aren't in this game. So maybe at some point they'll do a Kickstarter or release the later expansion. So that might be a good opportunity to jump in on it. But yeah, definitely a luxury game for sure.
It's awesome. Yeah. Couldn't recommend that one more. Jumping into my number one. And I wonder Roger what it knows is. What this one is.
Referenced it earlier.
I bet just like 2 or 3 months ago, this was probably like number 40 on my list. I don't even think I have 40 games. This one was just out of sight, out of mind. But then in October, an app came out for this game. And I have played it well over 40 times. I have played 40 matches at least of this game. And it has commandeered my top list. And it has made it hard to even choose games that come close to it. And that game is Root.
Mm-hmm.
Root is my new number one game. And I plan on it staying number one for a long time, and if it ever falls, it will probably be in my top five for probably ever. Mm-hmm. I am obsessed with Root. And as a note to the game, I got this back in like May of last year, and I was super excited because it had been out of print and had just come back in print because of its Kickstarter. But I played it like 3 times and everybody had the same reaction that Shut Up and Sit Down and anyone else who has reviewed it. They all had the same reaction that they talked about. Well, that was awesome. I would love to play it again sometime. This was cool. With a question mark behind everything because it was such a convoluted mess of asymmetry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is just, it's like someone took asymmetry in games and the idea and threw it at the wall and then just said, okay, that works. And it just made a board game out of it and put cutesy art animals on it and everything.
It's, yeah.
If you look at it that way, yes, it is. It is. It just looks like a mess the first time you play it. It looks like something that you could never get. But after I played every faction a ton of times on the app and got every single one of them down, after making that time investment, it has become the most fun game I have ever played. I love it. Because now I know when I'm making a decision or when others are making a decision, because I know that faction in and out, I can basically see, well, if I was them, I would do this or this or this. And just waiting to see what they choose and seeing them choose completely differently and blowing me away almost every time is so fun. And it's something that just isn't possible in the first five plays.
Yeah.
It's something that you can't get in the first 10 plays, I think, for a lot of people, because you'll be sitting there and you'll say, I kind of know what I'm doing. I have no clue what they're doing. And then playing it becomes kind of a chore. But I think one thing is clear to me, the juice is well worth the squeeze on this one. The time investment brings a glorious, amazing game to the table. I adore this game. I adore Cole Worley, the designer and leader games as a whole. I will buy anything that Cole Worley designs and releases at this point. I'm obsessed. By the way, he is the designer, re-implementer of PAX Premier Second Edition. Mm-hmm. And I mean, everything he designed in that game is just here in spades. I love it. I'll play it forever. Favorite game. So amazing.
And you got Oath on the way. So that is another one of his games.
Yeah. I didn't know much about Cole Worley when that one was released on Kickstarter, but I got the pre-order off online because Cole Worley designed it. It's like money out of my pocket, just running away into his pocket.
Well, one nice thing about Root is I think it's kind of like Everdell in that it can be pricey if you go in all in on everything, but the base game is fairly affordable if you're just looking to dip your toe into it. And from what you've told me, it sounds like the app is probably the best way to learn how to play the game, just because it teaches so well and it is relatively inexpensive. So that might be a good investment for anyone who's looking to try Root. I personally haven't tried it, but it sounds like from what I've heard from Egan that if I were to want to get into the world of Root, I would want to get the app and learn it that way first. So definitely a good tip.
If you're at all interested in Root and you have Tabletop Simulator or just the app, I know Tabletop Simulator, it runs it very smoothly. Same thing with the app. Try that first. Dig in deep a little bit. Figure out each faction. See if you like it.
Yeah.
I think it's so wonderful.
Yeah, I think app versions of games are cool because it gives you an opportunity to try it. You can learn it without making mistakes because the game won't let you. And if you love it, then you can invest in a physical version. And you can play it social distance while COVID's still going on. So, all right. Exactly. So my number one is a game that I've loved since I played it. It's by my favorite design company. I'm a big proponent of them. They're a really cool studio that does things in games that I've never seen before. The passion they put into their games is really evident. And this is Vindication by Orange Nebula. So Vindication is didn't see that coming, did you? But you should have. No.
No. You totally threw that one at me. I didn't know that was coming.
Yeah, no, it's Vindication, I think, is a sandbox in a box. Like it basically, for me, it's one of the few games where I feel like it tells you do whatever is fun and do whatever you want and it's viable. And the base game is really good. I do enjoy the base game. The expansion, they've added more expansions. They've added more things to it that have significantly like taken the game in a different direction and altered it. And I'm really excited for their latest Kickstarter, which is the Chronicles expansion, which is going to add a sort of like narrative to the game. And I know that was something a lot of people wanted initially, because the synopsis of the game is you're a wretched scumbag and you get in a shipwreck and you wash up on this island and you're basically going out to redeem yourself. And so this latest expansion is going to add sort of that storyline on top of everything you're doing. I still love the game without that, but I think that's going to take it to the next level that people want it to be. But it's basically resource management. You're moving cubes around to accomplish quests, and you can fight monsters and gain ancient relics and acquire traits. You can gain companions that give you special abilities. Overall, this game, every time I play it, it's completely different. There's so many modules and so much value in this game. It's really well produced. And Orange Nebula really puts that passion into the game. And I personally speaks to me. So every time they put out new stuff, which they continue to support the game, which is also very cool. It's always something different that gets me excited. So definitely right now, that's my favorite game. And the expansions just add more variety and things, kind of like what I said with Everdell, you can really take it in different directions. And I feel like Vindication has that in spades too. So yeah, I'm excited for their to see where they take this game. And also their other game, Unsettled, that's another game that that's their second game. And that one is also very unique, about exploring planets, and there's no combat, and everything you can encounter in the game has multiple uses. So I just really love the way that they push the envelope with their games, and how they try to do something different. And it really speaks to me. So they're my Cole Wortley, I guess. They're the ones that if they put something out,
there you go.
It's an insta back or buy for me. So
that's awesome. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting Rising Sun. I was totally expecting Rising Sun to be number one.
Yeah. So speaking of Rising Sun, there were a couple games that didn't make our lists. And Rising Sun is my six right now. It would be right after Monikers. And the only reason I didn't put it on is because I just haven't played it in over a year, mostly due to COVID. And so I wanted to pick games that I've been playing recently that were current. And so Rising Sun, while I do still love that game, I think it's the reason I couldn't put it on my list is because I just haven't played it recently. So, and I really want to be a proponent of games that I'm playing regularly. So that was one that I did not put onto my list. Did you have any that you wanted to talk about that maybe didn't make your list?
Yeah, one that I just played this last week, and it can't get on my list yet. It was the game that had the similar, it gave me the similar feeling that Food Chain Magnate gave me the first time I played it, kind of an eye-opening experience. That was On Mars. I just got On Mars recently, and I gave it a go with someone here in the town I live, and my gosh, I cannot believe how much depth there is in that game. And I'm trying to decide if it's forced by how many different moving parts there are in the game, or if it's truly something beautiful by design, because the decision space, if anyone has played Gaia Project or just, I think, any heavy game, it's almost like playing two heavy games at once, but it works somehow. It works. And at the end, the thing that I wanted to say that blew my mind was how much I felt like I had accomplished at the end. Like I had felt like I had colonized Mars, and in the coolest way. I mean, I built a casino on Mars, and it was awesome.
That's what every Mars colony needs, is a casino.
I think so. As soon as I saw the casino card, I said, well, Vital Lacerda, you have won my heart, sir. It was awesome. I loved I loved playing it. It was an awesome experience. I can't wait to play it more, and I hope that it keeps coming up and then I really end up loving it as much as I think I'm going to.
Yeah, and just to kind of reiterate, the games that we're talking about right now, Rising Sun, On Mars, the next couple games we're going to mention are games that we really like, but games that necessarily we may not have played them enough, or we may not have played them recently enough. And for me, Rising Sun. And so, because we really value like games that have staying power, games that are being played. And so another one that the game that I originally had on my list that I swapped for Journeys in Middle Earth is Brass Birmingham. And I have played that one 3 times, and I've played it 2-player all 3 times. And the only reason I couldn't put it on my list is because I feel like I need to play with 3 and 4 players just to get a full scope of it. And so that one, super streamlined, excellent game. Its rank on Board Game Geek is number 3 game of all time, which I believe is well-deserved, but that's just one I need to play a little bit more. And then another game that I've only played once that may come up this list is Dwellings of Eldervale. That is one that I really enjoyed, but again, I've only played it once. And this game I actually think plays better with less people. I don't think I'd ever want to play it with 6, which I believe is the max player count. That just sounds awful. But I think 2 or 3, maybe 4, if everyone knows what they're doing, is the perfect number. We did a 4-player game and it took a little longer. Then again, we were pretty new to it. I was learning. But yeah, I definitely could see Dwellings of Eldervale crawling up my list next year. So.
That's no, yeah, I've heard so much about each of those, especially Dwellings of Eldervale. I've mm-hmm. heard lots of things about them. One thing, I just heard a podcast the other day that said Dwellings of Eldervale, they said, hate the name, hate the aspects of the game, hate this and that, the art, it's just all generic. But then they were like, but man, I just loved playing it. It was such a good time. It was like eating Doritos or a big box of French fries. Like it just hits the spot. Like everything is so generic and meh. But then they said, oh, but the mechanisms and this, oh yeah, I can't get enough of it. It's so great.
Yeah, I think it's a masterpiece.
Heard that people dislike the art and everything.
No, I like it. I think
it looks pretty.
Yeah, it's definitely a production. It's like a top quality production. One of the best produced games I've ever seen for sure. And I think the way, like a lot of games try to like throw things together, like leftovers in the fridge, you know, they're like, oh, let's take deck building and worker placement and, you know, engine building, and we'll put them in a pot and hopefully this game is good because people like those things, so why not together? But I think Dwellings of Eldervale really like nails the integration of the different things that it does, because it has worker placement, it has combat, it has sort of an engine building aspect where you're gaining abilities and you're really trying to control territory, so it has some combat and fighting in it. So it really like nails all of those. I feel like, you know, a lot of games I play, it feels like something was sacrificed, but in this game I feel like it was all well done. So I just need to play it more. I definitely have plans to, so this one will probably be higher up on my list next year, but for now I've only played it once, so I don't feel like I know it well enough to replace something else.
No, yeah, that's awesome. I'd love to try that one eventually. I got a list, a growing list, and it's pretty much endless of games I need to try.
Yeah, that's the struggle, right?
Basically, to finish off my... Yeah, exactly. To finish off my up-and-coming list of games that hopefully keep on rising and gain favor with me so that they can pretty much get into my top 5 or top 10 or whatever. The first one, The Estates, haven't played it enough, but I really like it. It's brutal, just a brutal game. And it's so fun. Mm-hmm. Love the decision space and I love the bidding. So cool. Gaia Project. I haven't played it enough. I've played it 3 times. And only solo, but it has been tremendous. It has been beautiful. It's such a good solo game. I can see how it would be such a good game at any player count. I really adore it. And then the last one, Age of Steam. I listened to a podcast where they have all started praising Age of Steam. I think they've started doing blood sacrifices on the altar. It's pretty impressive, and I'm pretty impressed with it. And I'm hoping I can get it played enough to get to that point as well, because from what I'm seeing, it is an incredible design. I think it's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to try that one day. I think that might be the only train game that I could get behind. But for me, I just have two other Kickstarters that I'm waiting on, and I'm fairly certain Cthulhu Wars will be... there's a good chance that could be my number one game of all time by next year. Because I got the base game, I have all the factions coming. So that is my most anticipated game right now. And then the other one is Blood on the Clock Tower, which again, I think that could be just next level for the hidden role, whodunit type group experience. I think that really is going to set the new standard and be such a great experience. So those two should be coming this year through Kickstarter. So those two I can't put on my list. Obviously I don't have them, but I do have high hopes for both of them. So yeah. So did you have any other games, or is that that's your slot, right?
I mean, there's always games. Roger, there are always games that I want to keep trying and keep playing that are up and coming. But no, as of right now, I think that I have a really long list of games that I just want to play all the time. And hopefully this coming year, I can get a group, a better group together that's constant where I'm living now, and get these games played and play with more people. Because right now I'm playing solo.
Yeah. Thank goodness that's an option though.
Oh yeah. Heck yeah.
Well, we want to, because we value replayability in games that have staying power, one of our plans for this podcast in this year is to every couple months revisit kind of our top five played games up to that point. And it won't be as long as it is now, but just to kind of go over what we're still playing. Because we really value games that have that replayability and that staying power, that you can keep getting out over and over again. There's a lot of new games that come out every year and every month, but those games may have hype behind them, or you know, everyone's talking about it. But you know, and while that may be a great game, sometimes it's hard to cut through the hype and tell if that game is going to be one that you play long after the hype has died off. So that's something we really value and we want to reiterate on the channel. So we're going to be talking about that throughout the year, probably every quarter, every couple months. So we'll be doing another episode next month, and we will catch you guys next time. Thanks for listening. And if you have any comments, what your top five are, feel free to comment or let us know, and we'd be happy to hear from you.
Sweet. See you next time.